We have encouraged a lot of small units as leather units to make handmade shoes, to buy components. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, we have transferred technology within the country. We have so far been talking about the transfer of technology from one country to the other, but we have transferred technology within the country from a company which has the resources and the ability to do so to the small scale level, which has in fact then resulted in the employment of over 200,000 people. These are all examples of. Now, to encourage and to teach these people the skills that are necessary, we often get Italian designers from our international headquarters who go and conduct various training courses to teach the small-scale people to, and most importantly, after this production has been established and developed, we help to market their products through our retail network. We have, in fact, these shoes that you see over here are not about a manufacturer. There are some very, very good skills available in the small-scale sector which cannot be properly utilized because of the fact that people don't have the marketing skills. These are the small-scale sector goods which we which are exported on the behalf of the small-scale sector by Bata. We have production cum training centers. Now, these began with a call from Mother Teresa. I think all of us have heard of Mother Teresa, who runs various centers for the underprivileged. She called upon us to establish some homes for orphaned and rural youth who wanted to do something but did not have any either vocational training or any direction in which to go. So we set up various production and training centers where such youth are taught how to make footwear, which is then taken over by us for marketing. This has resulted in making these people into independent businessmen and has imparted dignity to their labor. The raison d'etre for all our activities is to take part in the national effort of rural development, to help village craftsmen and to ensure a fair return for small entrepreneurs. These efforts are directed at enhancing human dignity and building a better society, an expression of Bata's caring through sharing. We have also been responsive to various social causes which are outside general company activity. We recently launched a campaign, anti-pollution campaign for the Holy Ganges. In fact, Bata set up effluent treatment plants well before they were obligatory, and we set up various competitions, as you can see. We have also had a campaign against drug addiction, and recently had a campaign to promote the awareness for improving conditions in Calcutta. We have also been, Cardinal Sin mentioned this morning, we have been sponsoring a program totally unrelated to our own activity where we train a certain number of nurses every year under the Ramakrishna Mission, which some of you may have heard of. This is a voluntary service body. We train these nurses, and these nurses then eventually move to the rural community to help the villagers and the underprivileged. We also encourage young artists and have an art gallery where we frequently hold their exhibitions. In fact, as I mentioned earlier, the lack of marketing skills is the most serious handicap for the small-scale entrepreneur. We have set up various awards as well as training courses for these small-scale people to be able to learn the marketing skills. In these and other ways, Bata India goes beyond its obligations to fulfill its commitment to society and the country in the belief that its business is a good deal more than good shoes. Recalling the words of our founder, that in any country, we work to put something into it and not to take something out. Thank you very much.
If for no other reason, that was an excellent example of communications, which has been mentioned earlier. Now, our next speaker this afternoon is Mr. Kevin Luscombe. Mr. Luscombe is an independent marketing consultant, and he services local and international clients across a wide range of commercial categories. He is also chairman of the Melbourne-headquartered advertising agency Luscombe & Partners, and Australia's only national sales brokerage company, Super Brokers. His present career follows an earlier career with the H.J. Hines Company in Australia, the United States and Southeast Asia, where he was a board member and the director in charge of marketing and sales. Mr. Luscombe is active in business education and serves on a number of boards in Australia and offshore, including his role as chairman of the Thai Dairy Industries Limited. Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure now to introduce to you Mr. Kevin Luscombe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's 5 o'clock, it's been a long day, and if you feel like I do, you don't want to listen to somebody ramble on for the next 20 minutes. So what I'm going to suggest, in fact not going to suggest, I'm going to do, is to pull from my paper some of the observations that really address the central issue of the people component of what we're talking about. The paper that I had is printed in full, and I spare you all the details of the history of Thai dairy, except I want to quickly in a moment run through a couple of slides to put some of my comments in perspective. I'll quickly go through those, and in particular I want to dwell on one slide, because the reason that I'm the only speaker in this last segment and that I don't have a companion speaker telling the other side is that the gentleman who was chosen to be the speaker this afternoon, in fact who would have closed off this conference today, Mr. Saw Hock Su, the managing director of Thai Dairy, passed away just on 100 days away ago. And in fact, at midnight tonight, I'm flying to Thailand for his cremation on Sunday. His general manager, Narong Lissical, was coming down to take the paper, but because of the timing of the cremation, he was not able to come down. At the end of this very, very brief session, I will make a comment from some literal bedside observations that Saw Hock Su made to me in the last few weeks of his life. They're very pointed for what we're discussing here today. Before I get into Thai dairy, I'll just quickly touch on one other part of my experiences in Southeast Asia, which was where I took my first lesson in understanding cultural differences. And we're forever learning, and as Mr. Saw used to say to me often, the only unthinkable thing in life is to go through a day without some new knowledge. And here we are, bearing our intellects together over these several days, trying to work out how we can each develop our countries better, only to find to our shock in the last 48 hours that one of the great countries of the world, the United States, is run by the horoscope of the wife of the president. I think there are probably better ways to do things. To return to Thailand for a moment, or rather to return to Southeast Asia, my very first experience in marketing in that country was with my former employer's H.J. Hines Company, where I went in 1960 on my first overseas tour to conduct a test market for powdered soft drink. I learned three extraordinary lessons. They had nothing to do with the marketing textbook. In fact, I threw away the marketing textbook when I arrived and decided the only way to find out whether this country could indeed consume and afford and go on buying our product was to get out into the marketplace. So to the horror of my British trading agents and the American company's managing director, I took a hawker's license and set up a stall at the Happy World Amusement Park, which is where thousands of people go every weekend. I felt the quickest way to find out whether the masses could buy the product was to be there. There was no point in having just the expats and the top end of the market consuming the product. I decided I needed to hire some demonstrators. I ran an ad in the local paper in the Sinchu Jitpao and the Straits Times and sat in my office and waited for all these ladies to come in to be interviewed. I hired the fourth one as my first demonstrator. As she left, I noticed somewhat stifled giggles around the office. I asked my temporary secretary. Without any shock, she told me I'd just hired one of the most outstanding demonstrators in Singapore, known for selling things other than powdered soft drink. So retreating quickly from that position and learning that there were cultural differences, I then went into the field with my team of demonstrators, and in the marketplace we were finding that people were liking the product, and I bravely went into this new market area and watched my demonstrators retreat as I went in. And as I went around handing out samples of the product, getting more knockbacks than any man deserves in a lifetime, I suddenly realized I was in an Indian area and it was a fasting period, and the second cultural lesson was before me. The third one was the real point of the test market. And that was, we were superficially judging the patterns of the market by our own habits. We were prepared to believe that if people liked the product and could afford to buy it, ergo, the product would succeed. We found out that it had nothing to do with their decision to buy it. They loved the product. They could afford the product. They couldn't do anything about it when they got to their homes. The culture of having soft drink in the market in 1960 in Singapore was to buy it from an itinerant bicycle-riding hawker. It was part of the social event of the evening, to go into the streets and buy a cool drink filled with ice. They had no refrigeration to supply the ice. They liked the product. They were never going to do anything about it. So in that brief period, I learnt that all the assumed knowledge we have has to be put to the test in very real conditions in new markets. And then 20 years later on, I find myself in Thailand as chairman of a wonderful joint venture company that was set up long before I got involved, so I don't pretend to take any of the credit for its great success. Thai Dairy is today the largest food group in that country, and we have just recently joint ventured with Nabisco. We've recently picked up the Yoplait license out of France, and the company is a very important part of Thailand in supplying packaged goods. All of the history of that is in the paper, and I won't bore you with it now. Let me just show you very quickly if this goes. Yes? Well, good. Just remind us of the marketplace in which we are working, and that is the sort of environment. I'm not talking about flash Western supermarkets. I'm talking about street stalls. I'm talking about demonstrator girls in the street. And this gentleman here is beating me to the system. Thank you. And that's the range of products that are represented by Thai Dairy in that market today. This very small beginning has become a major supplier and a major employer in the Thai country and a major exporter in that area. Let me draw some conclusions from our experience there related to this human side of joint ventures of doing business in Asia. Firstly, in the area of social responsibility, it's all too easy to give you a litany of things that we do in the region. It's all too easy to tell you that we sponsor special drives for child nutrition work, that we're involved with the hospitals, that we're involved in a number of other charitable works up there. I was proud just not many months ago when we celebrated our 25th anniversary to tour with my wife and the wife and the then managing director to a number of schools for the blind and set in place very tangible contributions to the way those schools could be run. But the real social responsibility is understanding that the people that work for us are working in conditions that we would want to work in if we were in their position. And the real social responsibility is giving them not just rewards in material terms, but in pride in what they're achieving. So that in turn, they'll be encouraged to bring into the business people inspired by their success, whether it's working in the factory, the office, the laboratory, or out in the selling field. What we have today is a company that is making a contribution for Thai management, Thai manufacturing, and more recently, Thai export. Thailand, as you know, has a population of 55 million people. And one of the things that I run into constantly up there when I see other companies coming in to participate is this problem I mentioned earlier when I talked about Singapore. And that is the great problem of assumed knowledge and assumed knowledge superiority. I'm not sure whether it's because so many joint venture partners, because they speak English and because they expect the Thais to respond to their language, also believe that there's a lot of learning to be done in the management of business. Some of the best financial reporting and administration I've ever seen in the company is in that particular company, and not one expat is in the business. We now are down to only 4 expats in the company. In quality control, we still only have one. We have one in the plant and another one in another production area. We've taken the people from that company and brought them to other parts of the world. Wherever we thought was appropriate to help their education in their business, we took them there. And so today, that company is totally self-sufficient. The things that I've judged against the task that Barry Council gave to me when he put this conference segment together in the area of communications and management is that the responsibility we mostly have for communications is to be patient, measured, and repetitive without insult in the earlier days of developing a real understanding. We have instinctive communications habits, which if we're not careful, need to be checked against the assumptions of our established motives. We have to understand beyond the language that the way we do business is not necessarily the way other people do business. If we work hard at that in the beginning, nothing can get in the road in the long term of developing hurdles that are created by simply not understanding the other person's point of view. In the management area, we have to recognise that there is an educational task at the beginning, and that the contribution that we bring is in that learning. It is useless to be sending in experts to drop, deliver and run. It is useless to send people in there who have got short time frames, who believe that once somebody is able to play back something they've heard, that the task will then be managed properly. What is needed is absolute commitment, and that means commitment with people and time to help that education process. So that when we get on to strategic growth planning, we understand that the very first step may well be the ultimate determinant of how well we succeed. And that very first step is getting the people in place and doing our homework in the market. The two other key personal lessons that I've learned from this period are the need to establish the ethical parameters of the business and to go the extra distance in building a citizenship feeling for the people that you send there. The problems that we run into in the area of so-called business ethics are more to do with the judgments we make in judging how other people conduct their business than in learning the rules and regulations and practices of the markets in which we operate. We have to understand the parameters of their operation, their business ethics, so we can work within them. One particular example of that is in the area of contracts. When we negotiate a contract with these partners in the area, we found in the early days, and we'd have our lawyers and we'd have our suitcases filled with paper, and we'd be sitting around only to find the partner probably couldn't find the earlier contract. It was in a drawer, it was locked away. But what was in place was trust, integrity, and a very clear understanding of what was implicit in that contract. And we've had to learn that you don't run joint ventures by pieces of paper and legal documents. You run them by mutual trust, and you run them by understanding where each party's coming from. And I guess this business of mutual understanding is what it's all about. In the audience today is the son of one of the great legendary businessmen of Thailand, Mr. Chin, who built an extraordinary bank in his own lifetime and also died quite recently. But I had the great pleasure of being with him at a luncheon in his honour when he was retiring from his CEO position in the bank. And after the lunch, we were talking about his history in the bank, and I asked him, out of all these years of building this great business, was there one dominant lesson that stood out from his experience of building the Bangkok Bank? And he smiled and he answered through his son who was taking over the bank. His son turned to me and he said, his father said, the lesson is you bank with the man, not with the business. And I think that says a lot about what joint ventures are all about. There's no such
thing as the Shell Company. There's no Mobil, there's no Westpac, there's no Tidery. They are people who are determining whether those businesses will succeed or fail. The brand on the door stays on for years, the changing part of the people that run the businesses. And it's against that background of understanding people and the human side of joint ventures that I'll conclude by reading some notes I took when I spent time with Mr. Saw, who was then the chief executive of Tidery, the man who built the business, extraordinary individual, when he discovered that life was going to be taken away from him without much notice. He said to me, "We have so much to achieve together. In fact, we have a mutual responsibility to ensure that the people of the lesser developed countries are given the opportunities that their human pride and well-being deserve." He said, "We, in Thailand, have a wonderful country of people prepared to learn and give back to their brothers the future, or rather the fruits, of their new knowledge." He said, "You have an extremely fortunate country, blessed with so much. But I'm sorrowed to see its extraordinary potential for both self-development and a vital regional role being handicapped and weakened by what I see as a shortcoming in commitment and endeavour. This is such an exciting world with so much hope. It is at the same time in danger of destruction, not just in material sense. Greed and ego are the most dangerous diseases of our time," said Mr. Saw. "We have the great fortune of a partnership, you and I, which has not been a victim of these destroyers. Our priorities are for a balance between commercial goals and human reward. We must never lose this. Our contract is our trust. Our responsibilities are overwhelmingly to our people." I guess at the end of the day, it's a bit of a cliche. Somebody wrote a song about it, "People Who Need People." It's a cliche because it's true. And to me, that's the central core of what all this business venture and development is about. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy. That concludes the formal presentations, ladies and gentlemen. Although we're running later, I think we should have a few minutes for the open forum, so I'll now invite comments or questions. That seems to indicate that our speakers have performed their tasks very well today. Perhaps just by way of conclusion, I could pick up what I think was a very important comment made by Kevin Luscombe, and that was concerning contracts and concerning what is written down against the personal relationships. I was in Bangkok on the day of Mr. Chin's cremation, the man who created that very fine bank, the Bangkok Bank, and I was privileged to meet a very substantial customer of the bank on that occasion, and he too confirmed to me that Mr. Chin's philosophy was that you bank with the man and not with the security or the contract, and it is a great privilege for us to have his son Choat with us here today. I would like to thank on behalf of you all the five speakers we've had this afternoon. It's a very difficult task to present five speeches in succession and maintain interest, but we've had five very excellent presentations, and I'm sure that you would wish me to thank all of those speakers for the contributions they've made this afternoon. Now I'll hand over to Barry Council, who I think wants to make some announcements, or Mr. Ralph.
Just one thing that I wouldn't like to let the session conclude without.
Certainly my group did, and you'll forgive me if I'm speaking rather slowly this morning. One little apology. We made a few mistakes in the list of participants. We do apologise to the knights. They've been relegated back to being misters. So we've got a few knights here, Sir Rupert, I see, and Sir Gordon Jackson. We apologise to you. Before that list is printed in the final document, we will correct those errors. So we do apologise. One other little thing, an important matter, of course, the most important person at the whole Congress is our Treasurer. He did say, for those people who haven't yet wrapped up payment of registration fees, would you care to see somebody at the front desk, and we'd like to settle that as the day goes on, certainly before lunch. The final thing is the luncheon with the Governor-General. Very important that we're all seated at 1:45 sharp, and some briefing will be given to you by our venue subcommittee chairman, Peter Walsh, at the lunch on what the procedure is prior to the official party coming in. So very important, 1:45. I hope that you can all be there. We do want support for what we hope is an entertaining address from the Governor-General. So without more ado, I'll hand over to the chairman, Chairman Jaime, to introduce this segment. Thank you.
Good morning. In yesterday's discussion, we began our inquiry into managing in Asia a vision of development. His Eminence, Jaime Cardinal Sin, laid out our task in terms of, one, developing a vision of Asia based on the development of the fullness of all the members of Asian society without exception. Two, discovering the process that must be put in place for development to proceed towards this end. And three, discovering what we must do as participants of the process. Dr. Franz Seda continued the theme and presented a human-centered paradigm. The end of development is to preserve life and advance human dignity in freedom. He laid out the job of business within this paradigm as job creation, releasing human potential, and building learning organizations. Mr. Healy's focus was on the role of investment, particularly foreign investments, in the creation of wealth, job creation, and in raising the standard of living of host communities. In the afternoon, our speakers, Mr. Bailey of the ANZ Banking Group, Mr. Ishiguro of the Bank of Tokyo, Mr. Barry Council of Florshine, Mr. Karam Bedi of Bata, India, and Mr. Kevin Luscombe of Thai Dairy Industries drew different aspects of the human face of regional business ventures. Some of the features of this human face, as they trace it out, included, one, building networks, long-term commitments, and personal contacts. Two, an awareness of the needs and aspirations of the region, not only in terms, but also not only in economic terms, but also in terms of quality of life. Three, sensitivity to the differences brought about by language and culture. Four, working to put something in and not just taking something out of that community.